I'll take it in, but don't look down.
'Cause I'm on top of the world, eh? I'm on top of the world, eh?
What is going on, everybody? Welcome to the final episode of the season for JJ's Football Fix, the A-League Hour. This is episode 27. So we've done 27 episodes here, Jake, as stated in the title of the video, which is episode 27. My name is Jordan Gifkins, and alongside me is the very laxative Jake White. How you going?
Laxative, define laxative, mate.
I'm on it right now.
No, but I'm all right, mate.
Laxative's not thanks a word.
Yeah. I'm not surprised. I've never heard it. I've heard of laxative.
Yeah, laxative was the first one that came up. Thought I had a spelling mistake here, which is a substance to loosen stools and increase bowel movements. That's you. Yeah, as I said, this is episode 27. We've lasted a fair while in the A-League Hour podcast this season, which is ridiculous thinking, you know, back at the start of the season. We hadn't even started the podcast come round one. I think we started around round three or four.
Yeah, four or something.
So it's pretty good that we lasted a whole season. And we'll obviously talk about what's to come at the end of the episode. But Jake, obviously, as it was, and the talking point of the A-League in the past week, or on Sunday. Sunday night, the A-League Grand Final took part. Jake, an unfortunate day for yourself, an unfortunate weekend for yourself. But I guess it can be said, Sydney obviously won, for those who are unsure of the result, on penalties.
I'd be concerned if there's anyone listening to an A-League podcast that didn't know that Sydney won.
Stumbled across it from bloody Poland. Imagine if there's a Polish guy listening right now thinking, hey. yeah, so, I mean, great performance from Victory. You know, take him, you know, the whole 120 minutes. Probably as good, apart from the Western Sydney Wanderers, as good of a performance any team has given to Sydney FC this season. So it was worthy that it happened in the grand final. Obviously, at the end of the day, Sydney, I wouldn't say they were too good, but obviously they won the game. An unfortunate way to lose a final on penalties, Jake. As I'm sure, you know, over the years, we've, as Everton supporters, have been knocked out in penalties a couple of times and so. But, yeah, not fun. But, you know, a spirited performance from a victory and one that their fans might not have expected going into it. I know a few of the people on Facebook that I'm friends with thought it was going to be a boil over, and Victory were going to get totally smashed. So it's good that Victory put in a good showing and good signs for next season onwards, Jake.
Yeah, well, obviously very disappointed. Well, not disappointed, but upset that my team's lost the grand final to their main rivals on a penalty shootout. But at the same time, I was talking to a lot of my mates who were in Sydney and in Melbourne, just we're all in one big clusterfuck of a group chat. I couldn't be proud of the lads, not taking anything in the slightest away from Sydney. They were class on the day as well, and they've been class all season. And even said to some Sydney fans on Twitter too, they've been the best team by an absolute country mile all season. And as much as I wish Victory won, it just wouldn't feel like... obviously, I would have loved it if we won, but it wouldn't have felt like 100% fantastic if the best team all season by an absolute mile wasn't lifting up the most important trophy at the end of the season. So they 100% deserved it, but I couldn't be proud of the lads. They went out there, musket, set out the team perfectly, and getting the 1-0 lead early, you start to sort of think, oh, maybe is this going to happen? And again, like, even their goal, realistically, it was a great save from Thomas and then Berisha heading it off the line and everything like that. And they've smashed it into an open goal. Like, if that doesn't happen, like, if Thomas, like, nothing against Thomas, it was a great save. But if he saves it and goes out for a corner, Victory most likely walk away with a 1-0 win. So it's just those little things. But I couldn't be proud of the lads. They gave 100% and they came up against the Sydney team where we were given next to no chance going into the game. I looked at Sportsbet just before the game started, and as the game was about to kick off, we were paying $6.30. So we're paying $6.30 to win for a reason, because Sydney are absolute class and they were fantastic on the day as well, and they have been all season. So congratulations to all Sydney fans listening to the podcast. As much as I dislike your team, you've been class all season, and it was a very, very good game. And I think the TV ratings as well proves that although the A-League's felt a bit stale over the last 2 or 3 months, when the two biggest clubs in the country step up to the plate on grand final day, and it's a spectacle that it is, then people definitely do tune in, because I think I saw something that it was the second most watched thing on Foxtel so far this year. So that's fantastic to see, especially it's massive for Australian football and the A-League and everything. So that's great to see. And it lived up to the hype as well. Like, as much as a lot of people probably thought that it was going to be a boil over, I knew that we weren't going to die wondering. We're a very good team on our day, and with players like Berisha, Troisi, Rojas, who step up on big occasions, it was always going to be one of those games where if we don't take our chances, they'll punish us. And we took some chances, but at the same time, like, it's just the one percenters at the end of the day. Like, Troisi missing a decent chance, and then Troisi hitting the post, and then Rojas missing a one-on-one. But then you look at Sydney as well, and Lawrence Thomas stepped up to the plate again. And I think Lawrence Thomas should be, I don't think he will be, but I think he should be at least in the talks for a spot in the Socceroos squad for the Confederations Cup, because when called upon this season, every single time he has been absolutely class. And I think he deserves some sort of reward on a national level for that, because, and the same with Vukovic as well. Vukovic was absolutely phenomenal. So both teams, they've been the best teams all season. And at the end of the day, like I said earlier as well, the best team all season got the result. It's just, obviously, from a Victory fan point of view as well, it's just heartbreaking that we've lost in the grand final penalty shootouts twice against them now.
Just wanted to touch on, you made the point, the TV ratings on the day were the most watched thing on Fox Sports, or on Foxtel in general. Mm-hmm. So they reached an average of 367,000 viewers throughout the broadcast at a peak of 553,000 people, which was a 10% increase on the previous highest Hyundai A-League match they've ever broadcasted on Fox Sports, which was the 2014 Grand Final between Brisbane and Western Sydney. You know, this helped obviously with the post-game show and stuff. The numbers influxed to the post-game show. I think it was the number two watched thing to do with the A-League or something like that. I'm not too sure. But yeah, it was, I think, as well with the free-to-air coverage on SBS Viceland. I'm not sure on the exact numbers, but I think it was the highest Sunday evening broadcast in 2017. Like across anything that's been broadcast on a Sunday evening. This year, it got, I think, a 10% increase on whatever that was. So I'm not 100% sure of the numbers. This is what I'm reading and what I can make out, and yeah, my general smarts. I'm trying to figure out what the fuck all this writing is. But yeah, basically, a good turnout. You know, like you said, the A-League had been pretty, you know, stale towards the end of the season. We were saying it repeatedly on the podcast that it was becoming a bit of a chore, almost, the A-League towards the end of the season to watch it and get up for it and stuff like that. But, you know, it's good that the A-League turned out. It was a really good game and got the ratings. Yeah, like you said, Victory. You know, it was just a matter of you know, they could have done it. Like, it was just those little things. And it's like that in every game of football. It's always, you know, based on just the smallest margins in games. Like you said, Lawrence saves it. Goes out for a corner, like it could be a 1-0 win at the end of the day. It's that, or, you know, Victory, I mean, Sydney could turn around and score off that corner. You never know. So it's just a matter of inches and whatnot. But yeah, I thought Victory were fantastic. From what I saw, obviously, I couldn't watch the entire game. I watched the highlights and everything. But Victory were from all accounts, fantastic. So they've done themselves proud, Jake. If you had to sum up Melbourne Victory season, just in a few sentences or just anything you want to say, what went right, what went wrong, how would you go about that?
I don't know if I can sum that up in a few sentences, to be honest.
Give me a couple of minutes if you want, anything.
A lot went right and a lot went wrong. We had a very, very good patch through November to early January where we went 9 games unbeaten. And I think 8 of those were wins. So we went on a fantastic run at that stage and we started to really keep the pressure on Sydney around then as well. But you just look at the little things, like we didn't have an incredible amount of squad depth. The whole FBK situation where FBK didn't play for like 5 or 6 games because his contract was up in the air and he was only contracted to be able to play like 15 games this season or something. And then Bozanic leaving halfway through the season, it sort of left us a bit stretched. And I don't think that's anything to do with Musket. Well, I hope it isn't. But I think we just never had a settled team. But the things that went right for us, like players like Rojas coming back and setting the league on fire for the first 15 to 20 weeks, Berisha winning the Golden Boot, Troisi coming back and earning back his Socceroos spot, not through reputation, through the way that he was playing on the pitch for us. Donicky proving that he could be a capable replacement for Dalpierre, Thomas proving he could be a future Socceroo. So there's positives and there's negatives. The negatives is obviously I went into this season, not being arrogant, but went into this season thinking we would win the comp. I looked at our squad at the start of the season and didn't see any reason as to why we couldn't win the comp. And there's no negatives towards that, I guess, because like Simon Hill said before the game on Sunday, you look at Melbourne Victory's points tally throughout the season and usually that amount of points is within at least about 2 to 3 points of first place. So that's not a horrible season, but at the same time, like, we sort of limped into the final, so you sort of look at it as well. If we had have won the last few games of the season that we're playing, then, like, if Sydney don't have a fantastic season like they did, then maybe we do win the comp. But at the same time, like, we're always playing a chasing sort of game. We started the season very slow, and that's the only way I could really sum it up. There were a lot of negatives, but there are also a lot of positives. And I don't want to get too ahead of myself, but I think, in the words of a certain Sydney FC fan, there will be a fair few people at Melbourne Victory next season wanting a bit of revenge. And I would be, I honestly think that people like Musket will definitely fire up the troops for next season and Victory will be back better, bigger and better next season. I give it then, if I have to give us a rate, grading as well, I'm going to give us a B.
Musket's last season as a Victory coach as well. Excited?
Supposedly. It's not 100% confirmed that it will be, but I think it will be. Like it, like you said, it's probably going to be, and I think it will be. But at the same time, if you look at it from that, then obviously Musket, who's been at the club from day one, through a player and then as an assistant coach, then as a coach, he will want to go out on a high. And it's always a famous Kevin Musket sentence, he won't leave any stone unturned. So he will definitely do everything he could possibly do to make sure he leaves Melbourne Victory on a high, Jordan.
Yeah, I can imagine it'd be the best way for him to leave would be just to win that championship and bring some success to Victory before he probably moves on to the national team job, Jake.
do you think he's, question for you, do you think he's worthy of the Socceroos job?
We'll find out in a year's time.
I'm not saying this because he's Sydney's manager and he's just done a madness this season and I wanted to fuck off from the A-League, but I reckon Graham Miles should be the next manager of the Socceroos.
Hasn't he already managed the Socceroos before?
Yeah, but that was when, like, he hadn't really established himself as a top coach at that stage yet.
I think you've got to look at different components. You've got to look at success and you've got to look at style of play. Yeah. Sydney FC, despite their obvious success, their squad was miles above anyone else in the A-League. So, not miles. I think Victory were the closest and Melbourne City were close. But you look at the likes. Yeah. No team had a Ninkovic, a Bobo.
No team had a Bernie. Nobody team had a Bernie, a Beanie coming off the bench.
Yeah, exactly.
Put it that way.
Yeah. So, yeah, and they had, you know, Broski around. Matt Simon still, you know, probably getting to a fair few starting lineups, and he was just coming off the bench every so often. So, yeah. But in that saying, were Sydney FC the best playing team in the league? No, they weren't, yeah. In my opinion. You know, obviously they won games, but in regards to their play style and was it good to watch at times? No, you know, they grinded out a lot of results this season. But, you know, they got results, and if Australia want to take the path of a results-driven coach and they want to be able to compete and get results, you know, in future World Cups and Asian Cups and stuff like that, Graham Wilder probably is the right way to go. But we'll see what happens. Obviously, Postecoglou was, you know, one of the kind that he was managed to get a good style of play as well as get results. And we'll see what happens. If Kevin Muscat can get results and make Victory play well next season, then, you know, he certainly will come into contention and could potentially get the job. But,
yeah.
You know, I'm not too sure. It is pretty early in his coaching career to be given a national team job, but we'll see. We'll touch on Sydney, just their season. I mean, realistically, what more do we have to say about their season? You know, they won the championship, they won the minor premiers, they almost won the FFA Cup. It would have been an absolute wondrous season for them. It already was, but it would have been even better if they'd taken home the FFA Cup. But unfortunately for them, they lost to Melbourne City 1-0. Obviously, we're both going to grade them an A plus or an A or an A plus. You can't lose one game in a season and not get an A plus.
Especially when that one game they lost, they probably shouldn't have lost.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was an interesting game. Jake, any few words on them, their players, anything you want to do with the club? You want to say?
That class, there's no beating around the bush with that. Very, very good this season. From day dot, like their first game of the season, they had a Sydney derby, an away Sydney derby, obviously against Western Sydney, and they come out and smacked them 4-0. And I think they just set their intentions then and there. They played as a team, and they probably should have won by more than 4-0 as well. And they set their intentions from day one and carried it all the way through until the fifth penalty in the penalty shootout against Melbourne Victory. So they were fantastic all season. And this is nothing against Kevin Muscat or Melbourne Victory's board or anything like that. But I think the way they handled their sort of situations compared to other clubs were very good. Like Matt Yerman leaving halfway through the season. And then they brought in Jordy Bose, who's very good. And then you look at Melbourne Victory, and Bozanic left halfway through the season and Victory didn't replace him. So, like, it's just those little things. Like, they had their mind set out, I think, from day dot that they're going to win the comp this season, and they got the reward that they deserved.
Yeah, and it's...
And I'm honestly giving them an A+, obviously.
Honestly, they're the only club that once they lost a player that they pretty much immediately replaced them.
Yeah. And I didn't think I'd ever say this. I never in my life thought I'd ever say this compared to Brisbane's team a few years ago with Postecoglou that went 36 unbeaten. But this year's Sydney FC's team is the greatest team I've ever seen play in Australian football.
Hey, here we are.
I said a few weeks ago, I'm not going to call them better than that raw Salona team until they actually complete the title, because no one would remember them if they had lost the grand final and they won the title, and they are the best team I've ever seen play in a domestic season in Australian football.
I think you're very similar to a lot of people that are around the game, and that, you know, they were just waiting for them to win the title to bring the comparisons. Obviously, a lot of people were already saying prior to the finals, you know, when they finished the season with just one loss, they were saying, is this team better than the Brisbane Roar team of 2012, I think it was. And pretty much everyone was saying, if they can win the championship, then it will be certainly a hot topic, whether or whether they aren't better than that Brisbane Roar team. Obviously, it can still go two ways. Brisbane were fantastic, obviously. Like you said, 36 unbeaten is a massive feat. But Sydney FC, you know, it would be very, very interesting to watch that Sydney team versus that Brisbane team. And just to see what the result is.
Obviously, people don't remember as well, but the Melbourne Victory team as well in season two were absolute class. I think that group of players, the Melbourne Victory team, I think that's the best squad I've ever seen play in the A-League, the Melbourne Victory team of season two. But in the way of actually playing football, I would obviously it can't happen. We can't bring players back in time and stuff like that. But this year's Sydney team against the Brisbane team of under Ange Postecoglou, that would be some sort of game.
0-0.
Imagine Brisbane based their game off getting 60 to 65% possession every single game and having 15 more shots than the opposition. But Sydney based their game off defence. Not saying they were horrible in attack or anything like that, because that's the furthest from the truth. They were one of the best attacking team, if not the best attacking team in season. But they conceded 14 goals in 29 games.
Something like that, wasn't it? Ridiculous.
Yeah, so it'd be similar. Obviously, they're not those teams, but I think it'd be very, very similar to a Juventus versus a Barcelona or something like that. Where Juventus have just beaten Barcelona a few weeks ago in the Champions League, 3-0 on aggregate. But like I said also earlier in the season, defence wins titles. And it's all good and well playing a Barcelona or a Real Madrid every now and then. But if you can't mash it with your defence, like Sydney FC have done this season, then you're not going to win titles. And I would back Sydney FC to win that game against the Raw team of a few years ago.
Jake, just reiterating for those wondering, Sydney FC winning the grand final 4-2 in a penalty shootout after 1-1 after 120 minutes. We didn't touch on Brisbane and Perth and their seasons after they were knocked out in the semi-finals last week. We will quickly just touch on them and our thoughts. We'll start off with Brisbane. Now, obviously, when you think of Brisbane, you think of Jane McLaren, all the transfer speculation that sort of went with him this season, how good he was in patches. You got the likes of Borrello, Broich, Coletti coming through, Matt McKay still doing well. Great squad Brisbane have. And they did really well to make a semi-final. A really, really good game against Melbourne Victory last week. Weren't quite good enough on the day. I thought they were very good on the day, but not good enough, obviously. How do you rate their season, and what went right and what went wrong?
They just didn't find consistency. I'm just looking at the ladder prediction that I had at the start of the season, and I had them to finish fourth, which they finished third, so I guess I wasn't too far off. And I think that basically sums up Brisbane's season, though. They were there. They had the squad to potentially push on to do really good things, but they just couldn't find consistency. And I guess this is sort of a dig at his Melbourne Heart days, but I just don't think John Aloisi is capable of coaching a team to a championship. Because although he can bring out a team, and Brisbane could potentially one week come out and belt Adelaide United 6-0, they could then go get absolutely belted by Victory or Sydney 4-0 the next week. And I think that was their issue when they were winning games. They would win a few games big potentially, but then the next week they'd go and get belted. They just couldn't find consistency. And I guess that's what we have been saying all season about Brisbane and Perth. And we'll get on Perth soon, where they're both fantastic teams at home. Nobody wants to travel to Brisbane or Perth to play them at home. But when they're away, like a few, like last week when Victory had them in the semi-final, I wasn't worried in the slightest. I was already looking at flights to Sydney and stuff because I knew we'd beat them because they just don't have the bottle to win away games. They've got like something, I think this season or last season, I think it was, where they were very good last season, but they had they only had 3 more points away from home than what Central Coast had at home. Like, obviously, that's a different comparison, but Central Coast last season were horrendous. And Central Coast only had 2 less points at home than what Brisbane had away from home last season. And if you want to win a title, if you want to be good, then you're not going to do much if you can't play away from home. And that's their issue. They have no consistency in the slightest. They have fantastic players. Like, Jamie McLaren's one of the best young players I've ever seen play in the A-League. Barallo, there's a reason why Barallo's gone to Europe. Broich is one of the best players I've ever seen play in the A-League, if not the best player I've ever seen play in the A-League. And they've got a decent defender in De Vere. They've got good young players coming up like Coletti, but they just don't have consistency in their squad. They had players in and out of their team every single week. I was talking to my girlfriend's stepbrother or brother-in-law, whatever, about Brisbane and their consistency in their squad as well, leading up to the semi-final, and he said there was only twice this season where they backed up with the same starting 11. So it's just they didn't have consistency in their squad, and that led to not having consistency in the way they were playing and results, and that was their downfall at the end of the day. That's why they couldn't keep up with Victory and Sydney, obviously. When they were on, they could have been the best team in the league. But when they were off, they could have missed the finals. So I'll give them the same as Victory. I'll give them a B.
Yeah, well, pretty much like you said, that consistency would have been the biggest thing for them. They, you know, beat a fair few good teams in the league this season, obviously finishing third for a reason. You want the basis and the example of inconsistency for Brisbane was them losing 4-0 to Newcastle.
Yeah, exactly.
Literally puts a nail on the head. You know, Newcastle, a team that didn't do much this season. Yes, they had, you know, patches where they were very, very good. But a team that essentially did nothing this season went to Brisbane and scored 4 against them and beat them 4-0. So, you know, it is what it is for Brisbane. They've always been sort of an inconsistent side over the last few years. And alongside the next team we'll talk about in Perth, were very average away. So, you know, I'd be interested to see how they go next season and what they do to their squad, you know, with all these departing players.
I'm worried about the next season because, they could recruit some very good players because Brisbane are known for recruiting some very good players. But I'm just looking through their squad right now. They're going to lose Barallo. They're going to lose Broich. They're going to lose McLaren. Coletti's linked with a move to Western Sydney. So Hingett's linked with a move to Newcastle. So obviously he didn't play that much, but Cadbian's leaving. Jade North's linked to move as well. De Vere wants to come back to Melbourne to sign with Melbourne City. Theo might retire. Like, that is literally their core. That is the core of a decent team, but how do you replace that? Because obviously, but like as good as McLaren is as well, I don't think they ever replaced Berisha. I think McLaren is one of those players where if he was to go to like a championship or something like that, he would thrive at a team with 2 up front.
He's ruled out a move to the UK, I think.
Yeah. So, I think McLaren's a player that would be better off with 2 up front more so than him being a lone striker because
absolutely.
when he came up against teams like Sydney and Victory this year who had 2 big centre backs that would bully him, he was a myth. Like, he did nothing. Yep. But when he came up against teams like Newcastle, Central Coast, Wellington, who don't have 2 big centre backs who are intimidating, he was scoring goals for fun. So when he's playing against those sort of teams, 1 up front's perfect for him, but he needs that sort of like, obviously he's not going to go to Everton or Chelsea or anything like that and play alongside Lukaku, but he needs like a big, bulky Lukaku type striker who can hold the ball up for him and play him off sort of. So he's not the key focus point.
Just thinking off the top of my head, imagine he goes to the championship, goes to Sunderland and plays next to a Nietzsche.
Well, at the end of the day, that would be perfect for him.
Yeah.
Because like I said, he needs a sort of bulky player that he can sort of play off, because I've noticed way too much in Brisbane games this season, and he's not that sort of player in the slightest. But when I was watching him play against Victory in Sydney this season, he was playing as a target man. And Jamie McLaren is the furthest thing from a target man.
Well, yeah, we've spoken to a few people this year, you know, Brisbane supporters, saying McLaren's been playing the wrong sort of way as a striker, and evidently that was the case when he wasn't scoring many goals this season. So, yeah, look, I mean, Brisbane, they need to replace him. He's obviously out the door. It's the worst kept secret in a while. It's probably been known for about 2.5 months, 3 months now.
There's a lot of teams that have a big, big off-season ahead of them, which I reckon we should get into pretty soon, because there's a lot of teams that are going through a massive exodus.
Yeah, we'll touch on it. After we talk about Perth and their 2016-17 season, ended, unfortunately, at the hands of Sydney FC last week. Controversially, but I don't think the VAR system was going to stop them going out to Sydney.
Yeah.
But regardless, you know, despite a bit of controversy, gave Perth maybe a little bit of excuse. But, you know, we won't really touch on that too much because we spoke about it last week. But, you know, all in all, a similar season to Brisbane in that they were very inconsistent. Their home form heavily outweighed their away form, which it always has. Perth's obviously a very hard club to gauge where they'll be season in, season out, just based on their travel and how they're going to perform away from home. It's obviously very hard travelling from, say, Perth to Sydney or Perth to Melbourne and getting a result after such a long flight. So, you know, I mean, we can give them the benefit of the doubt. It is very hard to play for Perth and find success in Perth. So I think them making the semi-finals of the A-League is a really good result. Should that squad have been, say, a Melbourne-based squad, who knows, they could have gone further than the semi-final. But we won't read too much into the travel and stuff like that. Jake, they had a lot of good performers this season. Adam Taggart came back to the A-League this season. I thought he was very, very good. Hasn't played a lot of football in the past, you know, 18 months. So to come back in and it took him a while to get off his feet a little bit. You know, at the start he was just, you know, off the bench a little bit. Just, you know, getting up to pace, obviously being at Fulham before that, and I don't think he played a minute of the championship last season. You know, it's obviously very hard, but I thought he was very good for the most part. I think he scored about 12 goals, 11 or 12 goals this season, alongside Andy Keogh, who was a similar output. Chrissy Harrold, fantastic. He keeps going every season, he keeps getting better. We thought last season he was very good, and I think this season he's gone to another level, which is... he's a very underrated player in Perth. He's obviously, not talking about Socceroos calculations or anything, but just a really handy squad player to have. And, you know, Griffiths came back, was very good. Reece Williams came back, bit of controversy around him, but, you know, when he played, especially after he got over that controversy at the club, he was very good. So they had a lot of good performers this season. And for me, that I'd give them a better rating than Brisbane, just because, you know, they didn't have as much expectation, I don't think, on them than Brisbane, and they still perform to the same, if not a better level, for the most part of the season. But yeah, I'm interested to see what you think about good old Perth.
oh well, like I said. When I was talking about Brisbane, I looked at my ladder prediction for this season and I had Perth finishing fourth. They finished fifth, but they were very close to fourth anyway, so I wasn't too far off with that one, and I think that basically sums up the way they were this season.
We only get experts on JJ's football fix. So.
They were very, very, very disappointing at the start of the season, and I can't remember back that far, but I'm not sure, and I'm not sure if we did do a grading on teams halfway through the season. I think we might have, I'm not too sure. But looking back on the first half of the season,
I think we gave them like a D.
Yeah, I'd give them a D for the first half of their season. But I think they were the second best team in the comp for the second half of the season, beyond Sydney. Very good team. The way they started playing their football once they moved Reece Williams into that defensive midfield spot, they were playing some very, very good football. And like you said, Taggart coming back had a massive, had a massive thing to do with that. I don't know. because he's very obviously a great player, and then you have players like Taggart, Castro, Keo, Marinkovic, Harold playing up, all up front together. You're obviously going to score a fair few goals and have and play some very good football.
We haven't mentioned Diego Castro.
Yeah, I loved watching Perth play this season.
I didn't mention him at all. I was talking about everyone else, and then I'm like, shit, like probably one of the top three players in the league I haven't even mentioned.
But I loved watching Perth games this season, home and away, because they sort of started to get rid of their away problems. Like, they weren't a great team away from home. Like, we put that, like, they weren't good away from home, but they started to win games. That's the most important thing for them. Like, yeah, I say that, and then I look at them, they only won two away games this season. But
they were better. They were better than they used to
they
be.
They were.
Without getting the results, they were better.
Yeah, 100%. Like, you only have to look at their elimination final against Melbourne City for that. Like, they won an elimination final away from home against them. So, they were better this season away from home, and if they can start to sort of gradually improve on that even more, then they could be a massive title contender next season should they keep the players like Castro. I'm pretty sure they have Taggart, Keo and Harold locked down for next season. I'm not 100% sure on Castro. I think Castro is staying next season. So they could have a massive, genuine crack at it again, but they need to find consistency in their squad again, because it's literally, you could, we could basically just play it roll over the same tape as what we said about Brisbane. They just didn't have the same 11 every single week. Reddy, I think that's, I've been watching the A-League since season one, and Reddy's been in the A-League since, I think, season three. And that was the best season I've seen Reddy play at any club. He was fantastic this season. And as much as people take the piss out of him, I think Mark Warren was very good at left back as well for them. And Dino Djulbic is someone that I would want Victory to have a decent look at, because I think he's a solid centre-back that can, on his day, be one of the best centre-backs in the league. But they just didn't have consistency in their squad. They had the issues with Reece Williams at the start of the season, where he was linked away to go to Melbourne and Sydney halfway through the season. So they just didn't have consistency. They always had eyes on them for the wrong reasons. But at the same time, when they wanted to play good football, they were absolutely class. And I'm going to give them the same rating as Victory and Brisbane. I'm going to give them a B.
It's interesting looking at the ladder and Perth finishing fifth, and then them having the fifth best home and away record. No, they didn't. They had the sixth best away record. Okay, ignore that.
Well, they had the third best home record.
Yeah, and sixth best away. They finished fifth. I just realised they don't even move position when I click on the home and then the away. They just say how many points they got. That's all right. That's all. That's all for those teams. Let's talk about transfers, Jake. Actually, before we talk about transfers, I want to talk about the Australian under 23 squad that was named last week. Last Wednesday. So literally they released it right after we posted our podcast last week.
Cunts.
It always happens. Everything happens on the literally, day we post a podcast. We'll stop the podcast. Something's gonna happen tonight.
Yeah, we'll stop the podcast and then I'll go do whatever for the day, then I'll get on Twitter at like 5 o'clock and fucking Sydney FC have folded as a club or something.
Yeah, well, maybe. But bloody Victory just signed bloody Cristiano Ronaldo. We're just like, shit. I'd make an entire podcast just to talk about that. Anyway, the other 23 squad was named for the upcoming training camp in preparation for the AFC Under 23 Championships in China held in 2018. The qualifiers will start in July. Majority of these guys are the A-League players. The last training camp was majority overseas players. I think it was held about a month or two ago. This squad is mostly A-League players. They've got the addition of three overseas players, those three being Thomas Deng, who obviously came from Melbourne Victory at the start of the season to PSV, and the two keepers, Thomas Glover and Jordan Holmes, both under 21 goalkeepers in the Premier League. which is a fantastic effort.
So
we've got 21 players from the A-League this season in the squad. Josip Gombau has come out and said that a majority of these 24 will be part of the actual squad they take to the qualifiers. So it's good that he's sort of favouring the younger A-League talent as opposed to the overseas A-League talent. I don't know if it's smart to win games, but you know, he has said that a majority of this 24 is going to be the actual squad they take. So, you know, we've got the likes, like we mentioned, Borrello is in there. Coletti, Devante Klutz got a gig, hardly playing any football this season. Riley McGree, Socceroo from a couple of months ago now, is in the other 23 squads. Jordan O'Doherty is an interesting one. I don't know if he's at that level for under 23 in Australia's best, but it is what it is. Rian Tongic, Lachlan Scott, Josh Sotirio, Ben Garuccio. So a lot of good talent in here. Trent Bahaja is in there as well. Aspro. Daniel Azani is the youngest player in the squad, 18 years old.
Good player.
Yeah, it didn't get too much game time. I expect next season he'll get a little bit more game time. But, yeah. Australia
in a Central Coast.
Well, hopefully. They'd be smart. you know, we've got a lot of players in that squad that could have nice.
We features, literally just so. Want every young player just go to Central Coast.
Yeah. It's smart, wouldn't it? Australia grouped with Myanmar, Singapore, and Brunei. Not going to say that second part of Brunei because that is a ridiculous word. Darussalam. Jerusalem. Jerusalem.
Mm.
With a Daru at the start.
Oh, not Jeru. I couldn't tell you.
Yeah. So that's the under 23 squad. If you're interested, go check it up on Google for the entire squad in depth and stuff like that. Have you got the squad up in front of you or anything?
I definitely do not.
Yeah, that's fair enough. You know, it just goes to show. I mean, just looking at the names in the squad, that Australia does have some good young talent coming through the A-League. Whether or not they go and pursue careers worthy of their talent for themselves, we'll see. But a good young squad there. We will move on here to a bit of transfer talk, Jake. Fair few transfers been going through. Well, not going through, but a lot of linked transfers going on over the past week. A few re-signings here or there, Jake, if and oof, I don't know. The first one we'll talk about is Bernie Abeni. Now, he, obviously, the heartbreak story of the grand final, played a massive part, albeit coming off the bench most weeks, played a massive part in getting Sydney to the grand final this year. Fantastic player, you know, he's got talent, you know, in so many different areas of football. And he's just been plagued so much by injuries and unfortunately picked up a hamstring injury in the semi-final in literally the last 3 minutes of the semi-final last week and ruled him out of the grand final. Now, he has gone, I'm not 100% if it's confirmed yet, but he has pretty much signed for Vancouver Whitecaps in the MLS. Fantastic signing, or fantastic decision for him. The MLS is continuously growing, good level of football, and watching the MLS for maybe 3 or 4 years now, it's a very quick league. And for someone like Bernie Abeni, who's a very quick player, I think he might thrive in this league, which would be very, very good for not only him, but, you know, he's good enough to play for the Socceroos consistently. And he's good enough to probably go to Europe and make a mark at a biggish league. That's why he got to move to Club Bruges. So, be interesting to see how he goes over there, Jake. I don't know how familiar you are with the MLS and the style of play and stuff like that, but only positives for me for Bernie Abeni's move.
Yeah, I'm happy with this. I think it's one of those, because the staff in the MLS, I think, are second to none from what I've heard. So if he was to ever cop an injury and stuff, I think they would be able to, nothing against the Australian staff or anything, but I think if he was to cop an injury in the MLS, it'd sort of make recovery a lot easier for him. And yeah, I think it's just a really, I'm going to be really intrigued by it because you don't obviously get too many young Aussies with potential and stuff moving to the MLS, but the MLS is a very good developing league. So I think it's a really good move for him. He's obviously not going to get a ridiculous amount of game time at Club Bruges or anywhere in a top league of, at Europe at this current stage. So I think it's something that could benefit him a lot because the MLS is going on right now. So I'm not 100% sure if that means that he'll go to Vancouver right now and play for them like in 2 or 3 weeks. But I think it's a move that can definitely help him and his development.
Yeah, I mean, I can't confirm how their transfer system works. I do know that he has been confirmed on Vancouver's page. I'm just having a look at it now, and they're retweeting things about Bernie Abini. So I think it's confirmed. It's pretty good, actually. They're talking him up a lot, which is it's nice. I'll just read two quotes here by the Vancouver Whitecaps manager. Robbo, his name is. What a luxury. He's big, powerful, and can play as a wide player or as a centre forward. And just as importantly, he's someone who is hungry and keen to prove himself in Major League Soccer. That's fair enough. Says they've acquired him from Club Bruges. I'm not sure if that's a permanent deal or a loan. I can only assume it's a permanent deal. I'll read into that.
It'd be interesting to see because I think this could help our conversation from a few weeks ago as to how the MLS does compare to the A-League. Because it'd be interesting to see if he can go straight into the starting team or how he'll go up against the teams in the MLS. Because obviously, I hate mentioning it all the time, but the pitches in the MLS are obviously second to none. So he'll be playing on a decent pitch week in, week out. So he'll be able to flourish as a winger and a very quick winger as well. So it'll be interesting to see how he does compare there.
What's exciting about it is we see a lot of players from the A-League, a lot of the stars of the A-League go off and play in Europe and stuff like that. And if they're not playing sort of in the Premier League, it's pretty hard to track what they're doing in regards to, you know, seeing their performances and seeing how they go and watching their games. MLS, you know, they get their games on ESPN. We can watch it here. They post their highlights on YouTube. So, you know, when he does play, we're actually going to be able to see him play. So, you know, like I've been shouting about it for ages. The A-League needs to do the same just to build exposure. And it's got us in Australia talking about the MLS, not because we see the likes of David Villa go over there, Pirlo, Schweinsteiger, all go to the MLS. Half the reason we're interested in it is because we can actually go on YouTube and just watch highlights of games. We don't have to go to their website. I would never go to their website in 1,000 years. But
yeah,
you go on YouTube, and it's just a quick 3-minute video just sitting there on YouTube. You're browsing through YouTube and it pops up and a recommended and you start watching highlights of the MLS. Builds exposure for exactly. It. Now we're going to be able to watch Bernie Abini in a Vancouver Whitecaps shirt. Might be a reason for me to watch, even though I'm pretty sure they are the rivals of Seattle. So, more transfer news. Probably not to a high level. Shannon Cole, Western Sydney Wanderers, they've departed ways. I think, you know, he wasn't really getting much of a run this season. So, fair enough. Don't want to say too much on that, Jake.
He's gone to Shanghai or something, for sure.
Yeah, I'm not too sure, yeah. A bit of money, 32 years old, end of his career. Get a bit of money. Milos Ninkovic, big news, re-signed with Sydney. Massive for them. A bit of talk, he was going to leave at the end of the season and stuff like that. But, you know, class player, won the Johnny Warren medal. And he promptly deserves it. Ernie Merrick has been appointed the Newcastle Jets coach. Interesting. To say the least.
I'm happy with that.
Yeah, I think he's a good enough coach to definitely be coaching in the A-League, so that's probably really good. Probably a bit hard done by it at Wellington Phoenix, be back in Australia and coaching, which is nice to see, Jake. We'll finish a bit of transfer talk. We've got two more left. We'll talk about, first of all, your mob Melbourne Victory, seen linked with a move for Kosuke Honda. Which is, if he comes, poor. I think he's like 31 years old or something like that now, but class player on his day, and he's still playing at a good level in Milan. Don't know if he's playing too much, but he's a top player, and it'd be really good to have him on Australian shores, because I'm sure a lot of Australian football fans are familiar with Honda. And the last one we'll talk about, actually, we'll talk about two more, Jack. It'll be the Brisbane Roar pair, McLaren and Borrello.
Reece Williams.
Oh, and Reece Williams to victory. I think that's confirmed, so my bad. Pretty sure that's already done, if I'm not mistaken, but just not the other confirmation from the clubs or anything like that. Yeah, so Jamie McLaren, obviously, we've been talking about for a while now. Obviously, he's left, pretty much. He's not at Brisbane anymore. I think he's playing tonight. It's his last game for the club in the ACL, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, so...
same with Borrello.
Yeah, so I think Borrello's... yeah, he's another one that's leaving. I've heard Kaiserslautern in the second division in Germany, the two-dot Bundesliga. I don't know how...
going down the same route as Lecky, because Lecky started in the second division of the Bundesliga as well.
Mm, same as Kwame Yeboah. So, interesting, Kwame Yeboah is actually doing really well in the second team in Mönchengladbach. He scored like 11 goals this season or something. Anyway, not talking about him. Borrello, good move, bad move? What are your thoughts?
I think it's a great move for him. Especially, like, I know Licky hasn't had a fantastic season in the way of producing goals and assists. This year in Germany, but I think he's going down a very similar route to Lecky, Cruz, and Yeboah.
And Halloran.
Yeah, realistically, it's the exact same, and they're all very good players, and it helps develop their careers. Wingers are a reasonably big part of the Bundesliga as well, and the second division of the Bundesliga, obviously, too. So I think it's a very good move for him instead of trying to go bang and go into the top division of Holland or the top division of Germany or top division of Italy or whatever. He's not going and he's going and making sure that he will get minutes. Like, he's not going to go and sit on the bench for a team for the next three seasons. He's making a move where, yeah, it's not to a top division, but it's still going to be a very good class. And I don't want to disrespect the A-League, but the second division of Germany is probably a decent step up from the A-League. And it'll help him develop the way he is, because he's been fantastic this season.
Yeah, I think it is definitely a smart move to go to the second division. I wouldn't have minded seeing him go to, say, the Eredivisie or something along those lines. Maybe even Denmark, where A1 Mobil is doing really well. But or even Norway. Sort of one of those leagues, but I mean, the second division of Bundesliga is actually a really good level of football, so be interesting to see how he goes. Jamie McLaren, on the other hand, we're not 100% where he's going yet, even though his manager said that he reckons Friday this week we'll have an answer. So that's, you know, pretty soon, 2 days. realistically speaking, where do you think he's going to go, and where would you like to see him go, Jake?
I think he will go to the Netherlands. I think he'll go to a first division team in the Netherlands. But I would like to see him go to Melbourne Victory. I've seen him linked a fair bit with the Netherlands, so I think that is a decent fit for him, because I was actually looking through it a fair bit yesterday, and a lot of teams there do play with two up front as well. So if he could get into not an Ajax, but a team,
sort of mid-table team.
Yeah, sort of like a mid-table team that they're an established team, so they won't get like relegated, but they could potentially make a weird push for Europa League.
Yeah, like can get good supply and stuff like that. I think that's the main part for...
I've seen him linked with a team from Sweden. I forget what their name is. But yeah, I've seen him linked with them. And if he goes to them as well, they're going to be in Europa League next season. So that could be interesting as well.
Mm. I think I'm in a similar boat. I'd really like to see him go to sort of that mediocre level in Europe. Not like, not saying Belgium and Netherlands and stuff like that, mediocre levels, but they're not like the top five leagues, but they're not like
it's a step up.
Yeah, it's a step up. Like I just mentioned, Belgium would be a great option for him. Sweden, like you said, great league. You know, Netherlands as well. Anything in those sort of regions, I'd be really happy to see him play, so long as he goes there and gets minutes. I think that's the biggest part. He needs to go to a team where they play.
He'll play at least 25 games a season.
Yeah, yeah.
Minimum. And because he needs, start. If he wants to be a part of the World Cup squad, he needs to be playing. That's the thing. Like,
oh, 100%.
He's not at all going to go anywhere near the World Cup squad if he goes to a team like, fuck, I don't know, Aston Villa. Like, obviously, he's not going to go to the UK. If he goes to a team like a team that's in the Bundesliga or something like that, and he sits on the bench and he plays like 10 games a season and scores 3 goals, he's not going to get called up to the soccer squad for the World Cup. So he needs to be smart about his move and go to a team where he will play and he will score minimum 10 or so goals in that season as well.
Yeah, 100%. Well, I mean, Tommy Juric is in Europe and he scored maybe five, six goals this season, and we rate him as a very high player or good player, but we think, obviously, I think McLaren's a better player than Juric.
I think they're perfect to play against. They give Australia to play two up front. They're the perfect two to play two up front because Juric is a sort of target man that can hold up the ball and McLaren can get in behind.
Even Cahill alongside McLaren.
Yeah.
I like Australia, how they play a 4-3-3 with the wingers and stuff like that, but they need to try something out. And if they want to play two up front, McLaren needs to be next to someone like Juric or Cahill or something like
you
that.
You know what? I reckon McLaren should go to the MLS.
It wouldn't be a bad joking. Move, wouldn't it?
I reckon that'd be, like, the only bad thing about the MLS that I have is their season. Like, that they don't start till, like, January or something like that. But, like, even that, like, I want the A-League to be on the same level as the MLS, but it would be a step up because he's going to be up against strikers like Giovinco and Dos Santos, who should be playing in a top 5 league in Europe. So, even, like, I don't think he will go to the MLS, but even the MLS wouldn't be a bad.
I honestly think, so long as he goes somewhere, gets game time, that's the main thing.
Even if he stayed in the A-League and got game time. As long as he's getting game time heading into the World Cup next season, and he's scoring goals and playing decent football, that's all that matters, and he'll be on the plane to Russia, should we make it.
It's also going to depend on his performances. Assuming he gets picked for the Socceroos squad in the next qualifier and the friendly for Brazil. If he performs well, 100% Confederations Cup. But it's going to be interesting. I personally think he's going to be in the Confederations Cup. If he does well, you know, World Cup's definitely an option.
I genuinely think over the 27 episodes with done on the A-League Hour, I reckon we've talked about McLaren for at least 2 hours.
Yeah, combined. Well, that's the thing, like, we both rate him so highly.
I love him so fucking much.
He just needs to kick on, and this is the biggest season in his career coming up.
Yeah, 100%.
If he can kick on, get some game time, score some goals, play in the World Cup, do well,
win the golden boot.
This is
up.
The difference. This is the difference between him either stalling and being, say, like another, oh, it would be harsh, but say another Robbie Cruz sort of thing, where he kicked on a bit but didn't quite kick on to the level that he should have, or him becoming, you know, a well beat up, top class player.
Next Tim Cahill or something like
that.
Yeah,
like, even
because he has all the makings to be the potential next Tim Cahill. He has everything in his locker to become
a finisher. He's a faster player. He's probably a better passer of the ball. He can't head a ball as well, but, I mean, who can?
even Ibrahimovic probably couldn't.
He's got better instincts, striker instincts, than Cahill. We see it time and time again in the A-League this season. He pops up in places where you wouldn't expect him to pop up. Yeah, he doesn't convert all of them, but that'll come. If he can start converting more chances from, you know, the positions that he just pops up in, this season he would have scored 25-30 goals. There's a lot of chances he missed and a few penalties he missed as well. So, yeah. I mean, what a player we've got in our hands. He just needs to kick on and really, you know, take his career to the next level, Jake. I think that's all we're going to talk about today in the final A-League hour of this season. What a time!
What a ride it has been!
What a roller coaster of a time! What a ride.
And we'll bring you episode 28 before round one next season.
That's it. Just in regarding to everything to do with football, obviously, with this channel and the show, the Everything EPL podcast will obviously continue until the end of the EPL season and then probably kick on maybe fortnightly throughout the transfer window. The A-League hour will remain the same. We'll probably take a break from the A-League over the, the course the Socceroos are playing in about 2 weeks' time. The squad will be announced. We'll be back then for the Socceroos. We'll talk about them over the Confederations Cup. But post-Confederations Cup, we'll be back with some A-League stuff. And don't go anywhere because you will be missing out if you do. But obviously, it's been episode 27. My name's Jordan Gifkins. I've been joined by Jake White for 27 episodes. Give him a clap.
Yeah, give him a clap. Boys.
What a guy. Expert analysis. Absolutely love it. Make sure you stick to the Facebook page. Subscribe to the podcast on Audio Boom. We've been here for 27 episodes and we'll be here for 29 next season, I reckon. Actually, probably about 31 because we missed 4 episodes this season. We'll be back Friday with the Everything EPL podcast. Until then,
have a nice. I'm on top of the world.